We were discussing John Peck, and we said the years before the Civil War, years of Baptist expansionism, there are churches starting everywhere. The rest of the 19th century is referred to as the years of Baptist education. The years of Baptist education. The years before the... Okay, well, in most areas, local associates of Baptists were formed to promote joint projects. That should say associations of Baptists. Were formed to promote joint projects. On a state level, missionary conventions were formed, usually identified with either the Southern or Missionary Baptist Convention. Bible colleges, universities, seminaries, and publishing agencies were common. By 1850, it's estimated that one out of every 11 people identified with Baptists. Okay? That's significant from having gone to almost a fringe group to being 1/11 of the population. And while this may seem strange to folks who live in greater Chicagoland, where we are much less in influence than the Buddhists, Muslims, or Hindus, in many states of the United States, Baptists are the largest religious identification, particularly southern states. Only the Methodists had more influence. Baptists were no longer the outcasts of society. The objects of persecution, and Baptist schools were often attended by non-Baptists. For example, the Christian school I'm responsible for, probably 85% of the student body is non-Baptist. We're no longer the fringe of society that you would avoid at all cost. Sam Houston, first president of the Republic of Texas, and first governor of Texas after it became a state, was an active Baptist. He was sort of a rough character and maybe not always the best example of what Baptist stood for by his own definition, but he was saved and was a member of a Baptist church. The emphasis on colleges, nice campuses, and academic recognition seemed to change the character of the mainstream Baptist movement during this era. Seemed to change the character. Before, Baptists were rough-hewn. Their Bible colleges met in churches. Or the very famous Western character, Charles Goodnight, first cattle drive, very influential character in Texas, built a Baptist college on his ranch, for example. But you didn't see Baptists with the nice campuses that other people had. But now you did. Reverend Thomas Curtis of South Carolina said, "The requisites for an institution of learning are three B's, bricks, books, and brains." He said, "Our brethren usually begin at the wrong end of the three B's. They spend all their money for bricks, have nothing to buy books, and must take such brains as they can pick." Not a very good reference to Bible college professors there. But our brethren ought to begin at the other end of the three B's. In an attempt to rectify this somewhat, Baptist leaders put greater emphasis on Bible training. Greater emphasis on Bible training. And seminary education. J.P. Boyce, B-O-Y-C-E, became a leader in this movement. And he changed the way many people thought about seminaries. He encouraged the admission of non-college graduates, practical experience for students, and demanded a commitment from all teachers to be loyal to the Baptist distinctives. Again, it was you sort of developed this mentality under his influence. Bible college is a sort of general purpose degree. Seminary prepares you to be a preacher. And so the concept became 7 years of training, where previous to that, the concept had been whatever training you can get. And this changed things. People would argue for better or for worse, but it certainly changed things. He encouraged the admission of non-college graduates, practical experience for students, and demanded a commitment from all teachers. He said, man, you've got to make sure your teachers hold to the doctrine of your school. And I've watched enough over the years to know that is the case, and when you don't do that, things slip fast. Usually it starts out something like this. Well, all our Bible teachers will believe what we believe, but this person's an English teacher or a history teacher or something, and that is where colleges begin to corrupt. Well, he was one of the founders of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. During Boyce's lifetime, this seminary seemed to inspire a return to basics among many Baptists. Return to basics. One influential professor at Southern was John Broadus. John Broadus, B-R-O-A-D-U-S, who had been a very successful pastor who now devoted himself to teaching young men to preach. Teaching young men to preach. Broadus is somewhat, for me, of a role model. Broadus made the statement that he was called both to be a preacher and a Bible college teacher. It was often thought of then and often thought of now that it's one or the other. And when I felt God working in my heart at 17, I felt God had called me to be a preacher and a Bible college professor, and have continued to feel that way for the last 43 years. And at different times in my life, that sometimes seemed like a tension. I have pastored where there was not really opportunity to teach Bible college. I've taught in Bible college and not pastored, though I kept busy preaching. I tell folks the circumstances I have now at Ravenswood are the ultimate fulfillment, because I pastor and yet have the liberty to teach in a number of settings, including here at Day Spring, which I'm grateful for, and trip to the Philippines every year when I teach at a couple colleges. And I feel really fulfilled in both parts of that more than I ever have in my life. But Broadus has been something of a role model for me and somebody I have studied some because of his statement about his call is the same as my statement about my call. I'm not comparing myself to Broadus in terms of accomplishment or ability, but I am in terms of being called. He felt all through his ministry he was called of God to do both of these things. And I have felt through all my ministry I was called of God to do both of these things. Well, he encouraged the production of Sunday school literature. He encouraged the production of Sunday school literature. And the first Southern Baptist publishing house was named Broadman Press, after him and another professor at Southern, Basil Manley Jr. These men were devoted Baptists who helped train many Baptist preachers. And he wrote books along the way about how to keep people doctrinally sound. He wrote a book on training preachers, wrote his book on his own experience, and yeah, I remember reading where his daughter said you could constantly see him curled up in a house with a theology book. And I think my family can probably relate to that somewhat. The beginning of the 12th century saw Baptists active in every region of the country. They had enjoyed freedom for almost a century and were now socially respectable as any other group. They now comprised about 1/16 of the American population. The American population had boomed because of millions of immigrants from Europe. And many of these people were of Roman Catholic or Lutheran background. Roman Catholicism was now the largest group in the nation, and Baptists comprised the second largest group. And that's where you see today, in a church like that which I pastor at Ravenswood, 50% of the people at Ravenswood were once Roman Catholic. And that is where there are so many Roman Catholics around. That is where the soul winning has been done. Famous Frontier Baptist. Okay? Mentioned some already. But Jesse and Frank James, the famous outlaws, you'll be happy to know, were members of a good Baptist church. And they did not consider themselves outlaws. They claimed to be carrying on the Civil War because they only robbed trains and banks belonging to Northerners. Historians are not all convinced that they practiced that as well as completely as they said it. But they started, I think, without... Matter of fact, when they started as bank robbers, There were a series of banks owned by a fellow who had been was the Union General that closed down the Baptist churches in New Orleans during the war. And so at the beginning, they would only rob banks that he owned, Benjamin Butler. And I think they began to expand it to banks and trains owned by other Northerners. And after a while, I think they may have gotten a little loose in their interpretation of who owned the bank. Because a bank looks like it might be owned by a Northerner kind of thing. Anyhow, that train looks like it might be owned by a Northerner, and probably the driver's a Northerner too. So there you go. James did not consider themselves outlaws. They claimed to be carrying on the Civil War because they only robbed trains and banks belonging to Northerners. They became controversial in their church. In those days, you couldn't serve a warrant across state lines. They lived in Missouri, went to a Baptist church in Missouri, and they never robbed anybody in Missouri. So they go rob something, get back to Missouri, couldn't touch them, they go right back to church. Well, they became controversial in the church. And they were voted out of the membership by a narrow vote. Somebody asked me about that one day, and I said, I would have had to check the tithe records to see whether they were tithing from their bank robberies or not before I knew what my position was. This even became a controversy in very recent years because there was a question about Jesse James' body, and they found what DNA proved to be his body. And his descendants wanted to bury him in the cemetery that church owns. And we're talking less than 20 years ago. And the church had a controversy over whether or not to allow Jesse James to be buried there, and finally voted by a narrow margin not to let him be buried in the cemetery. So they made arrangements to family descendants, made arrangements to bury him in a cemetery close by. A preacher friend of mine preached the funeral. And we've had conversations over that more than once. Abraham Lincoln's parents were strong Baptists. The church that they were members of split over the means versus anti-means debate, which we're going to get into shortly here. As a result of this discouragement, he never formally joined a church, though he attended many and spoke highly of the Bible and evangelical Christianity. After he was elected to the presidency, but before he went to Washington, Lincoln was baptized by a German Baptist preacher. His wife was a staunch Presbyterian, and he kept his baptism a secret. The preacher claimed that after his death, a lot of people thought and made that up. But many years later, two professors did interviews with the housekeeper that the Lincolns had, a black lady housekeeper, and she testified to that, said he came home one night dripping wet and said that he had been baptized and not to tell Mrs. Lincoln.